following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Hey, a day without rain, at least as far as I know in my part of town, because it looked like a week where there's going to be rain, and there probably will be rain before the 24 hours of Tuesday is up. But anyway, it's a nice looking day. Hope everybody is doing well. We have a full studio, and we will have our regular Tuesday guest, Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, is waiting for us to contact him. We'll have him. Andy sent out a note and said we'll sort of do a wrap, and then he'll get a little bit of a break, because it's not like Andy hasn't been doing something with football, basketball, and baseball. He has been busy with play-by-play through the entire year, and we'll bring him back around the 1st of August.
Yeah, he said August. I wouldn't mind connecting with him around media days if he's up there and we can grab him for a segment. But I think the weekly visit from Andy Burcham, right, probably this is your last installment until we're previewing the Baylor game.
We're seriously ready for football.
And there's news there that they announced that it's going to be a blackout Friday night in Waco for the Baylor program, going with an all-black motif, which I think Nathan King pointed out on social media. Like, that's going to look cool against the traditional Auburn,
right,
white uniform that you'll see on the road on Friday night for a really interesting week one matchup.
Yeah, so
we'll talk more about that in the next 10 weeks or so.
Yeah, we've got time to get into that. But joining us also here in the studio, it's Bill and Dan, as usual. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, going to be out of town here later on in the week, so he's here in the studio with us as well. Ferg, how's it going?
Doing well. I feel like I think Tuesday might be the only day I've never been on this show, so I needed to
that's good.
Kind of collect the punch card here. So yeah, no, happy to be here. Didn't want to be completely gone for the show for a couple weeks in a row, but yeah, heading down to Florida to see some family later in the week, and thought, you know, I was talking to Dan last night, and I was like, why don't I just come on and do the show tomorrow? Go ahead and...
I saw your car, and I thought, you doing another podcast today? Did you have to redo it again?
No. The third try podcast would have been enough. No, but happy to be on, and like I said, first time on a Tuesday. I'm looking forward to this.
Don't think I mentioned it on the air yesterday, but yeah, Ferg and I recorded a podcast.
We did 3 hours of podcasting yesterday that we could only keep half.
We recorded a full episode of the podcast, and the moment I hit stop on the recording software, Windows...
The whole computer just
said goodbye.
No, Windows hit me with a frowny face.
Yes.
Like, which I'd never seen that one before, and sure enough, the that one's lost to the... lost to the ether, and we had to try to do it again, like the old Steely Dan song. So, but yeah, we got it done, and it's great to see Ferg in the house here on a Tuesday.
Yeah, so we'll spend a good bit of time with Justin, but as I said, we're going to bring in the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us one more time before we get a little bit of a break. Andy, we were just talking before we brought you in, and you know, August sounds good, but maybe a hit around media days.
Yeah, I will be at we'll be in Atlanta, part
good
of
deal.
The the ambush that Coach Freeze is doing in Atlanta to coincide with Auburn's day at media days. So yes, absolutely, we'll work something out and knock it out in July. But good to get a little bit of time off and gear up for the start of the 2025-26 athletic season, which will be here before we know it, to be sure.
Yeah, you haven't had – when was the last weekend, Andy, that you haven't had some kind of some kind of broadcast that you had to do? Probably last September, August,
well,
September?
Yeah, you know, a Saturday, Sunday off, we had that a couple times. We had that after the Ole Miss series because
well,
that was a Thursday, Friday series. And we had Saturday, Sunday off. We got back, but Christmas. Christmas was my last full weekend. And to be honest with you, I really wasn't ready for it this weekend. I fully expected that we'd be in Omaha gearing up for the College World Series. So, you and I have talked about this back when we were doing the show together long, long time ago. And my wife knows this. I go through a little bit of it. It's not easy when a season comes to a close for me, especially one where we really felt that this team was gearing up for a run in Omaha. And so it takes me a little while to get readjusted, but I'm quite certain that the open weekends, I'll be able to adjust to that and get ready to go. That's for sure.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, obviously it was a tough way to end the season this past weekend. Coastal Carolina came in, and they leave as the hottest team in the country now on a 23-game winning streak. But that Friday game, I thought it, you know, as it progressed down the stretch, it's like loser of this game is going to be very tough for it. If Coastal had lost it, would have snapped their 21-game losing streak. And when Auburn came back from that 6-1 deficit on Friday to tie it up in the seventh at 6, they had all the momentum, and that one – really, I mean, that was a real shot to the gut to not be able to win that ball game Friday.
I agree, and I believe that Auburn completed that comeback and won that game on Friday. That we're en route to Omaha,
I believe it too,
today or tomorrow. I really do, and not to take anything away from Coastal Carolina, because they came in and I thought pitched as well from a starting perspective as any team that we saw all season long. I thought the bullpen was very, very good and on par with what we saw at Texas. To that point, the Texas bullpen was the best that we had seen. But that entire staff just pitched it extraordinarily well against Auburn. And I thought ultimately that turned out to be the difference. But I believe if Auburn finds a way to scratch across a run in the bottom of the ninth, on Friday, I fully expect that Auburn would have won that series, and we'd be going to Omaha and getting ready to face Arizona. But hats off to Coastal Carolina, and they took care of business and beat Auburn in two straight games in front of a combined almost 16,000 in those two games combined at Plainsman Park.
Andy, it occurred to me Friday night that if the series didn't go Auburn's way, it was Ike Irish's. You know, it could be Ike Irish's last time wearing the uniform with a big decision approaching in the Major League Baseball draft in July. If Ike Irish does indeed go pro, as a lot of folks expect, what are you going to remember most about his 3-year Auburn career?
Well, I mean, he was an accomplished hitter for Auburn from the first time he stepped foot at Plainsman Park. I've heard a story about when Gabe Gross first came to campus, Auburn's current hitting coach, and Hal Baird went up to Steve Renfro and basically told Steve, don't mess with this guy, when he was talking about Gabe Gross. Now, obviously, Steve was a hitting guru, and you see Steve Renfro in what Gabe Gross teaches now. I believe he's really one of the first players that we've seen since Gabe that came in as polished as a hitter as he is. And then we saw about midway through that first season starting to develop the power. And he was better as a sophomore, and he was an All-American as a junior. And he should be, and I've seen some of the projections now, that Ike will be a first-round pick. I saw one last night that he's a first-round pick of the Milwaukee Brewers. And he should be. I mean, he's that accomplished. And he can give you help defensively if they want to develop him as a catcher, or if they want to develop him at first base, or they want to develop him in the outfield, but he's a hitter. He's a hitter. And I think his game translates to the pro level. because he can hit with power to all fields. And at times he's trying to go more opposite field than he is as a pull hitter. And you don't see that for someone coming out of college that often, like you see it out of Ike Irish. And he was also one of the team leaders. He was one of the legacy leaders on this team and may have been the only junior that was a legacy leader on this team. Everybody else, Park Carlson and Cooper McMurray and Ben Shore, those guys were all seniors. They knew that this was going to be their last year. And listen, Ike Irish played three fabulous years at Auburn. He is the first first team all SEC player to repeat since Gabe Gross.
Right.
And watching him play this year reminded me in a way to what we saw from Jabari Smith in his one and only year at Auburn. Because you knew that he was a one-and-done guy. And it was like, I remember saying when Jabari was here, folks, enjoy watching this young man play now because he's going to be in the NBA next year. And I thought the same thing about Ike Irish this year. Enjoy him now because he's going to be playing pro ball later on this summer. And I think he did everything he was asked of and more at Auburn. And you don't see a player at Auburn that combines his hitting prowess with the power that he developed at Auburn. And by the way, a pretty good arm in right field, too, for Auburn. So I think Ike is a first-round draft pick coming up next month, and I wish him nothing but the best because it was a blast. It was a blast to be able to watch him. That's for certain.
Yeah, no question, Andy. I mean, when he came up, you saw it as a freshman, the way he hit the ball with authority to the gaps. They were doubles as a freshman, and you could feel, all right, as he matures a little bit, those are going to turn into homers. And yes, his power to left center is very impressive for a left-handed batter.
Well, and not only that, and I agree with everything you just said, Bill. But that's a young man that came to Auburn with a plan. He and his family, his team had a plan when he came to Auburn. I was told that he came to Auburn with 40 credits already under his belt, 40 college credits, and he graduated in 3 years. He graduated this year. He's a college graduate as he gets ready now for his pro career. So he did it in the classroom. He certainly did it on the field at Auburn. He was a leader on this ball club, incredibly focused young man. And I think he's going to, I think the sky's the limit now for him, for whichever team takes him, hopefully in that first round next month of the Major League Baseball draft.
You never know how things are going to work out in the draft, but right. if he ends up at one of those National League hitting parks, you know, if he's a Brewer or a Red or a Rocky, I could see
prefer a Cardinal
and even a Cardinal. I could see a Wrigley. I think it would work.
Hey, the Braves could use a left fielder.
I think things. A bright future. Buy stock while you can in Ike Irish. Andy, one of the reasons you've pointed out in the past, like why this Auburn team was able to overachieve relative to what folks thought in the preseason and the expectations, 12th in the SEC from the coaches in the preseason. One of the big reasons why was the way the freshmen delivered, both at the plate and on the mound. What can you say about Butch's eye for high schoolers who can contribute immediately and the contributions Auburn got from true freshmen this year?
Well, listen, when this freshman class, everybody came to campus. And it was a highly touted freshman class, too. When they all turned down the Major League Baseball draft and came to campus, that was noteworthy. Because, Bill, you and I talked about this before. I don't remember a freshman class like this, maybe a freshman class ever. In my 31 years at Auburn, of covering Auburn baseball, that has everybody came. Everybody came to campus. And this freshman class then played like the class that we thought it had the potential to be. And Chris Rembert is a freshman All-American and is going to get a chance to play for Team USA this summer after some time in the Cape Cod League. Bub Terrell blossomed down the stretch of this season. An extraordinary athlete that can play anywhere in the outfield. He can play at first base for you as well. Great arm. Runs much better, I think, than some would ever believe. And I think we will see him develop power-wise as he gets stronger.
Oh, I agree.
In his time. It was a blast for me to watch Chase Frelick.
Yeah, another freshman All-American.
A guy that was a subpar high school catcher, to watch this young man do what he did this season. And the story about being a highly prized tennis prospect with over 60 offers across the country, including, I think, Auburn. But then to get that opportunity on a day where college scouts were coming to watch a teammate of his in travel ball as a pitcher, and he went 4-for-4 with 2 home runs, and all of a sudden his baseball career takes off. And what he did calling every pitch for Auburn this year, and what, 48 starts behind the plate for Auburn. He's in the Cape Cod League this summer. Butch Thompson told me today that he believes that Chase will get some work not only behind the plate, but at both corner infield spots this summer as well. And he's a delightful young man to talk to and to watch him progress throughout this season. I mean, he can play. He can stroke it, and I think we will see his power numbers increase at Auburn. And then Christian Chatterton, Andres Alvarez. We never did see Gatwood this summer, but he's pitching, or this season, but he's pitching this summer. That's someone that was as highly touted, Bill and Dan and Ferg, as any Auburn prospect coming in.
And the most highly touted pitcher.
Yeah, he's pitching this summer. So watch out for that young man, and I can't wait to watch him when he comes back for fall ball, because it's a guy that throws upper 90s and into 100, you know, in the triple digits. And we never did get to see him because of a preseason injury this season. Mm-hmm. So, and that class is all coming back. So watch out. I mean, you know, and really, I think one of the big question marks now for this ball club is Eric Snow, because Eric Snow was terrific in the last of this season and can play second, third, or short for you. He hit like we thought he was going to be able to hit down the stretch. He is a draft-eligible player.
Sure, because he's
a
junior.
I believe he is in the Cape Cod League, and there will be a decision to make. I think he will be drafted. So the decision is he drafted high enough? Is he getting enough money from Major League, from pro baseball to give up another year in college? But, you know, another year in college is now a full scholarship year for these guys. And that's something that Auburn's never had the ability to do. There have been some schools out there that have been able to somewhat fully fund their programs with scholarships because of the way it's done at Vanderbilt, or the Hope Scholarship, or whatever scholarship that's out there because of the lottery and that type of thing. Well, Auburn's about to enter that world. And I think that evens things up for Auburn and other schools in the Southeastern Conference. But that's a guy that Auburn really wants back, but he has a decision to make at this point. And I can't comment specifically on those guys that already have signed with Auburn, but I'm sure it's been talked about. You guys have talked about, and some with a local angle that Auburn has helped itself with, including this past weekend. I mean, Auburn was recruiting and had families and recruits on campus recruiting before, maybe even during the Super Regional this past weekend. So I think those formal announcements that already are out there, I think those will be coming by the end of the week. And we talk about it on the Talking Tigers podcast with Butch Thompson on Monday, as a matter of fact. So everyone is disappointed with the way this season ended. And I hate that this is it's the end of the careers at Auburn of a Cooper McMurray or Parker Carlson or Ben Shore and guys like that, and Ike Irish,
Derek Fabian,
and guys like that. But I do believe with what Carl Nonnemaker, who is Auburn's recruiting coordinator, and what Butch Thompson and this staff have done, they have set themselves up for many, many years of exciting baseball, and what a fabulous year this was from an atmosphere perspective, Bill. I mean, you were calling Auburn games back in the days when it was bleachers.
Before the aluminum bleachers were in. Yeah,
correct.
So
what an amazing
transformation
during the aluminum bleacher days. And now what this ballpark has become now is truly remarkable. And the Auburn family has responded to that. I mean, it was record crowd after record crowd after record crowd at the end of the season. And I've told a story before. When Plainsman Park, the current edition of Plainsman Park was first built, and it was one of those that was triumph. I mean, it was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And as beautiful as that ballpark was, Hal Baird would talk about other teams coming in from the SEC, and while the opposing coaches would compliment Auburn on its brand new ballpark, they would also say, "Listen, we really aren't too worried about coming in and playing baseball against Auburn because the atmosphere is just okay." And they were just being blunt with Coach Baird. I don't think you can say that anymore. Not with what has become of Plainsman Park and what has become with the support of this program. It's totally different now. And you know what? In saying that, even more hats off to Coastal Carolina,
mm-hmm.
because they came in here with over 7,800 on Friday. Most hung around after the rain delay and on Saturday and got out of here with that super, super regional series win.
Yeah, and I think they've got a chance to do some serious damage in the College World
Series.
Bill,
that pitching staff is fantastic.
Yeah, we didn't even see the guy who has their second best numbers.
Right. We pitching will take you a long way. Mm-hmm. Effective pitching takes you a long way in Omaha, Nebraska, the way it's set up.
Yep, no question. Again, tough that it's over, but the future, no question. I mean, it's really, really bright there in baseball.
Agreed.
We're just about done with everything. Track and field is getting underway. The championships, I guess, get underway starting tomorrow. And Auburn looking to repeat as a top five, you know, team. Finished second last year, and they're number six going in on the men's side. They're going in, so they've got that. And then, Jackson Coivin about to be on the big stage as well.
First major ever for the Auburn men's golf superstar, and he'll be at the U.S. Open this weekend.
Won't be his last either. It'll be his first, and boy, what an incredibly tough track to get your major career underway at Oakmont. But it won't be the last time that we watch Jackson Coivin on the biggest stage, because that young man is incredibly talented, and still everything indicates that he is coming back for his junior year at Auburn, in spite of the fact that he's already qualified for the PGA Tour.
Yeah, how about that, Andy? It's it has been great having you on again. We look forward to catching up with you during media days, and hope you are able to relax, sort of unwind, and get ready for what should be a fun 2025-26 athletic season.
I agree with you, Bill. And let me just say this. Let me just hats off to the folks there at Auburn Network, Inc. and Ben and Jacob and Steve Witten and you guys and the incredible work that you do, not only on this daily show, but as our flagship station in Auburn on Wings 94.3 here on ESPN 106.7. As well. You guys are a terrific partner for us at the Auburn Sports Network. It's my pleasure to be able to join you throughout the athletic season on a weekly basis and to talk about this program. And I look forward to when we're back together again at SEC Media Days and in August as well, guys. Thank you very much. Have a great day. War Eagle.
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, and yes, it is our pleasure.
Congratulations to Andy on a tremendous season. Thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, another great one for Andy, and yeah, we're just thrilled that we're part of it again.
Yeah, couldn't be happier to be partners with the Auburn Sports Network.
All right, we will get to our first break. No, we're a little late, but I mean, we didn't want to just take a break, while we had Andy on the line.
And I knew that if we got Andy to talk about Jackson too, like he was gonna say some. I mean, that's such a cool thing to have, a top amateur at the U.S. Open this weekend, and maybe look, whether or not he makes any noise, like Andy said, it's not going to be his last major. And you know what a cool experience it'll be for that young man this weekend.
All right, we'd love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Come on in.
The perfect spot for your next event is Tiger Town Sports. Whether you're hosting a family gathering or corporate function, Tiger Town.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson. No, it's not Thursday. It's Tuesday, but Ferg with us today because he's going to be out of town a little later this week. And, man, there are a lot of things we can get into with Justin here in the studio. We'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports-wise, 334-321-1390. Bruce bringing us back. Might as well talk a little basketball. Have you had a chance to see the guys work it out yet?
Not yet. But you know, hopefully doing that in the near future. But yeah, I mean, it's guys getting back out there. Practices seem to be very fast paced, and a whole lot of work being put in because this is a team, you know, outside of Tahad, you're starting from scratch.
Yeah, and of course Tahad. Taking a little time off himself, if it's it's a great time for like Caden Magwood. Yep. I mean, he's the guy right now at point. I guess somebody, and that's why I haven't talked to anyone personally. We asked Brian. Brian said, "Nah, JG had watched a little. He hadn't gone out there yet." I'm wondering who else. Yeah. Is handling the ball right now. I mean, it may just be maybe a walk-on.
But. Yeah, it seems to be the case right now. You know, and you've got some other guys that I think could be pretty good, like kind of secondary playmakers and guys at guard that I think could, you know, in a pinch run it, kind of like how Chad did the last couple of seasons. But, yeah, you know, it is Tahad, and that was the thing. They did clear the decks for this guy.
Feels like it's easier to project. You got to be careful, but it's easier to project sort of what Auburn you should expect from the guys who have played high level D1 basketball, the Keyshawns, Overton. It feels like the wild cards are the other guys. You know, you factor in players coming over from Europe or jumping up from D2 or jumping up from junior college. Do you have a sense of? You know, I mean, picking any of them, of how, you know, like, I mean, I guess Bashir is one who looks like Auburn could be, you know, Auburn could be counting on him a lot. Like, what's your sense of how his game could translate from the junior college level to SEC ball immediately? Because it feels like he's somebody who could be counted on to contribute pretty early in his career.
Yeah, I think Bashir and Elijah Freeman kind of are in the same boat here, because I think those are guys that when you look at Auburn's off-ball guards, you know, you're going to need guys like that to step up this season. But like, how are they going to make that jump? How are they going to make that move that quickly? You know, the question with Bashir is, I mean, there's no doubt the dude can shoot. Led all of junior college basketball in threes. I really like his playmaking.
Auburn's had good luck with junior college 3-point shooters. Even though he's not a Raider, right? It's, you know, he's not.
And he also didn't have any D1 experience kind of coming in.
Well, that was also a Tay Waller reference. Yeah. That was, you know, when we're talking about Okaloosa, you know, and Northwest Florida State.
Yeah,
I
think he works really, really well in transition. I like his secondary playmaking ability. I think he's got more of a slashing kind of drive to the basket game than people may give him credit for. The question is going to be defense. Not only generally speaking, you don't know what you're going to get from a guy when he comes into Auburn and how he's going to do defensively. But to be very frank, the conference that Abdul Bashir played in junior college, I mean, there were two teams in his conference that averaged over 100 a game.
Yeah, saw some of those scores.
Yeah, it's just crazy, crazy amounts of scoring played at a high pace. So it's going to feel different there. With Elijah Freeman, I think, you know, athletically, I think this is a dude who's got all, you know, everything that it takes to play in the SEC right away. You watch Elijah Freeman, you hear his story, you see his background, and you think, yes, this dude was playing Division II basketball last season, but he probably shouldn't have been. This is a guy that is extremely talented.
Late bloomer, right?
Sort of very much a late bloomer, and also a guy that didn't fully commit to basketball until very late in the game. He was a baseball prospect.
Yeah, he was like a 6'3", 6'4", guy.
Yeah, and then he blew up into 6'7", 6'8", and his coaches told him, hey, basketball might be the direction for you. So by the time he fully commits to basketball,
it's a big strike zone.
You know, there's some tall guys that
there's a lot of tall
play
guys.
Okay,
yeah,
in Major League Baseball now.
But like you look and you see with Freeman athletically and just the ability to do some of everything. I mean, the fact that he's a great scorer, and I think it was at a low volume, but he was an excellent 3-point shooter last season. His rebounding, I think, has been overlooked as well. This is a guy averaged nearly 10 boards a game. You know, the thing with him is just he was so dominant at the D2 level because he was the best athlete on the floor. Is he going to be the best athlete on the floor in the SEC? Maybe, maybe not. I think of it a lot like when Chaney Johnson made the jump from D2, that he was now playing at around guys that were near his athletic ability. But let's be very clear. Chaney Johnson was one of the best athletes on the floor every time he stepped out there. Didn't matter who he was going up against. So I really like Freeman's ability to potentially carve out a really, really good role on this team, you know, because – I like the fact that he can do some of everything. To me, he strikes me as a perfect three in this system, which would keep Auburn flexible in a lot of spots, especially when you look at what you want to do up front, you know, with Keyshawn Hall potentially playing the four, and then obviously, you know, Keyshawn Murphy bringing in Filip Jovic as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy that can kind of – those two guys can kind of be linchpins of this kind of whole thing for Auburn, because if those two guys click, you can maximize your – versatility with some of these other guys who have that D1 experience, who have that ability to maybe a little bit more adaptable coming in to SEC ball.
Your sense of Phillips' strengths and weaknesses coming in, because it seems like between if you project the Keyshawns as the starting front court, and again that's a loose, like, we'll see. But even if that's true, you're going to need more than two.
Sure.
And between Phillip and Emeka and Sebastian, It's a, you know, it feels like it's a pretty big jump for any of those guys. Phillip might be the best prepared of the three.
100%. Yeah. I mean, just as a guy who's played professionally the last few years, I think the thing about Filip Jovic that's so striking is that he is an Eastern European player who plays above the rim. And he does, that's just, you don't get that a lot of times. He's a great slasher, he's a great cutter. He's a guy that does a really good job of playing with and without the ball in his hand, but just getting downhill. And we see that. You know, Keyshawn Hall has got a lot of that to his game. I think Murphy has got some of that to him as well, others on this team. But, like, he does it at 6'8", 6'9", and moves really, really well. Likewise, kind of like with what we were talking about with Elijah Freeman, he was – you watch the film of Filip Jovic, and you realize this is professional basketball in Eastern Europe. So you got to keep that in mind. But he was the best athlete out there, and kind of like Freeman was. And so it's like, how much does that athleticism translate? If it does, if he still is – I mean, because I think he moves really well for a big man. Sometimes you would get worried about – or maybe a little bit concerned of, like, okay, how is this dude going to be able to move his feet? Can he play mobile? Can he play – he does all of that already. I think the way I described it was, if you watch Filip Jovic's highlights and you just – ignore the uniforms and the court design and all that, you would look at it and say, oh, that looks like American AAU ball, or, you know, guys coming in from smaller levels of college basketball. It's a very athletic game. It's a very, you know, it kind of breaks the mold a little bit of what you think of with the Eastern. You think Croatian big man signs Auburn, you think you're going to get dude who's going to park himself down low and kind of operate back to the basket. Or even if he does play face up, it's not going to be a dude who tries to take you off the dribble. Go watch Filip Jovic's highlights on YouTube. Just type in Filip Jovic's name on YouTube. You'll get about 20 dunks. Like, that was the thing that he became a really big star at a young age in the league he played overseas, because he was doing stuff that a lot of guys weren't doing with that kind of athleticism. And so that is really, really exciting, because it's a guy that has that, oh, I'm used to playing in this, you know, obviously European style of offense, but that four and five out, the cutting, the constant movement, he did a ton of that. He's grown up playing that way his whole life, but he's also not going to be a guy that I think is going to step out into American college basketball and just be overwhelmed that everybody's so much bigger and faster and stronger than he is. He looks like he can hang at that level.
That's, yeah, it's exciting just thinking about these guys that are coming in. Word coming down today, the NCAA, the Basketball Oversight Committee, changing.
Some good moves.
There's some rule changes that are going to be really interesting to watch. There's a coaching challenge, which is coming to college basketball.
Yep.
Going to be very similar to the coaching challenges. You got to have a timeout.
Yep.
And if your challenge is correct, then you'll retain that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I thought was really that the NCAA says they're trying to speed up the flow of the game.
Got to.
Because it has been so ridiculous. A couple of the things that I thought were really interesting, Justin, is officials can only go to the monitors on out-of-bounds plays with a challenge now. They can't just...
Is that in the final 2 minutes, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's got to be that way because games
of games just seem to last forever.
And it's ridiculous to get to a point where, you know, you're spending so much time looking at it at one possession. And sure, possessions can be big in the long run, but like you were slowing down the game. There's no flow for it whatsoever to see, you know, a judgment call, a 50-50 call, a call that, you know, usually isn't the make or break for a game. Now, if it comes down to, you know, hey, did the guy have the possession? Who did it go out on? Whatever. And it's if this team inbounds the ball, it's over. Or, you know, this gives them a last second shot to come back and win. That makes sense. You know, you want to get those right. But, like, doing this at other times is just crazy.
I believe flow of play was the
game
actual,
flow,
like,
yes.
Yeah, game flow is sort of like the reason
they're trying to change these rules. Because, I mean, the games were taking 2.5 hours, and it would be –
to play college basketball.
Yes.
To play 40 minutes of college basketball.
Outside of the last 2 minutes of – are we saying a half or just the last 2 minutes of the game?
I think
I think that's right. Outside of the last 2 minutes of the game, out of bounds becomes a thing that you need to challenge as a coach.
That's on
the sidelines,
which is, I think,
that's one where those can be those reviews can be interminable.
Oh, yeah.
Did the goaltending rule change?
No.
Is that still – because that's still a – I believe a coach can challenge
– officials – I'm reading the NCAA release. Officials can initiate video reviews on basket interference, goaltending, and restricted arc plays in the last 2 minutes of the game in an overtime.
Yep.
So the only time they can do it is in the last 2 minutes.
Otherwise, you have
to
challenge
in overtime.
So you're going to need to challenge goaltending or basket interference,
yes,
which would be a pretty significant change because those are, I believe, the rule before was those were
reviewed as soon as it happened.
Those were automatically reviewed every time they were called.
Mm-hmm.
And now, can you?
And it says now the NCAA last 2 minutes thing. That's the only thing of the last 2 minutes. Any out of bounds.
Right.
Every out-of-bounds play, even in the last 2 minutes, can only be reviewed by a challenge.
And that makes sense to me.
Wow.
That makes sense.
Officials can't just decide, hey, we need to check this unless
think it's going to do a better job of keeping officials accountable because so many times you'd get into these games where ball go out of bounds and they're looking at each other like, I don't know. All right, let's just go look at the monitor then. And it's like, well, what are you doing out there if, you know, basically you're having to call it by replay. The other one that really stood out to me is the continuation rule.
I thought that it's going to be more like the NBA.
And honestly,
and you've seen it. You've seen so many guys get those calls.
Yeah, they're getting those got more and more popular in college these past couple seasons. Having a clear definition and a clearer definition of what that is. And look, I know, you know, college basketball is not the NBA, and I know not everybody who watches college basketball likes the NBA, and I get that. I understand that. But the more and more you can make the game like the professional game only helps these guys better.
Well, and it makes sense if you are in the process of making a shot, taking a shot, then you ought to be able to go ahead and finish it. It says you can either complete the step or you can pivot and let the ball go.
Yeah.
As opposed to
you gotta
where
be
before
in, you
the got, ball had to be leaving your hand when you were fouled.
You got to be in the motion of creating a shot, making a shot.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to be in the act of shooting.
No.
But it's like if I'm driving on Bill and Bill grabs me as I'm driving to the basket, I still have an opportunity to take a step
and let the ball go.
Because that's what I was going to be doing. I think that's better. The only other thing I would say is just, you know, we can't have a perfect system because I am still just begging for quarters. I am begging for quarters in the men's game.
What do you think?
It is the only basketball played in America that doesn't have quarters.
Do you like,
on the planet.
So see, I wasn't sure about everywhere on the planet.
Men's college basketball is it, because the women's game switched to quarters. I don't know how much women's college basketball you've been watching.
From peewee to intramural to church ball to high school.
You don't know how much women's college basketball I've been watching.
But no. I'm talking about just the people who are listening.
It's because here's the
one. It flows a lot.
I like the quarter system. What I'm curious about, if men's basketball went to the quarter system, so women's basketball goes straight to the double bonus at 5.
Yeah, it should. And I'm with that. I'm fine with that.
I've never been a fan of the 1-on-1.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, so women's basketball is a double bonus at 5, and I kind of like that better too.
Again, that falls in line with the professional game and around the world. Like, you know, just and again, if you're gonna play with the quarters, the help there is that every quarter that foul count resets.
Yeah,
and that's huge. Not your individual, but the team.
No, team. Yes,
and that prevents you from living at the free throw line. Because how many games have we watched these last two seasons where it's like, well, both teams are in the bonus, and we're not at the under 12 timeout yet.
No. All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love your thoughts on these rule changes. Anything you want to talk about sports wise? As we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one of the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio.
We're chit-chatting about the House settlement a little bit during the commercial break. It occurred to me, because I had someone ask me, like, well, why would football schools opt into this deal if there isn't a cap keeping schools that prioritize men's basketball, or schools that don't even field a bowl subdivision football team? There's nothing keeping them from spending a considerable amount of their $20 million on men's basketball.
Why wouldn't they?
Right.
Why wouldn't they?
And I think the easiest answer to why would schools opt in is, if you're in the SEC, the Big 10, the Big 12, or the ACC, I don't think you have a choice, because those conferences were defendants in-house versus NCAA. It's their settlement. Mm-hmm. And I think that the alternative to, if you wanted to be in the SEC and you wanted to opt out of this deal, I wonder if it would threaten your standing in the SEC.
It should.
I think it would also, that would also go for your membership in the CSC, the corporation that's going to regulate and hand out discipline. And apparently membership in that includes a promise not to get litigious. And to go through there, that was CBS's story, was that membership in the CSC.
You're going to abide by those rules, or you'll be penalized by the what do they call it? What are they calling the
corporation? The CEO.
No, I'm just
of,
saying what is the guy.
Sealy? The CEO?
What is his position called?
A CEO, isn't it? I believe he's the CEO of the CSC. We've talked about the college football czar college athletics czar, but I don't think my suspicion is, if you have a situation where schools are going above and beyond in individual sports and it skews competition, these rules could change after 1 year. Like, if you have a situation where it's like, all right, well, the traditional basketball schools spent a huge percentage of their $20 million on men's basketball, and they were the Elite Eight, or they signed
the top 50 players in the country,
and some of the schools in the SEC and the Big Ten and the ACC think it's unfair because they're also having to pay for football programs. I could see that causing a reevaluation of and maybe even individual caps on how much you can spend on sports, which would be the next step
it would stink if you are a St. John's, though, and you're in an organization that then puts a cap of $5 million when you've got extra money.
Sure.
I think that's one of the
trickier aspects of a program-wide cap that includes programs outside of the 130 whatever that are fielding a bowl subdivision team. Like, you've got however many, what, there's 200 something other teams that are in Division One in a lot of other sports.
Right.
And if you know, and some of those are in the Big East, which has a pretty healthy media deal, and some of those are in pretty major markets that feel pretty good about their chances to raise that $20 million for personnel. I don't know what the, I mean, it's what's fair for St. John's in this situation feels like it could be less than fair for the teams in the SEC and the ACC and the Big Ten and the Big 12. And I feel like those conferences are ultimately going to win. If there's a...
The SEC and the Big Ten?
Yeah.
Yes. I think so, too.
That's where I'm putting my money. So.
All right. We're halfway done. Love your thoughts on that. And we'll talk some football as well in hour number two, which is coming up here on the Tuesday Drive.
Production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive, and what's turned out to be a sunny Tuesday afternoon. It was sort of overcast off and on during the day, but a nice day today. Hope everybody is doing well as we welcome you into the second hour of the show here on this Tuesday. It's Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, who's usually with us on Thursdays, going to be out of town toward the end of the week, so he is in with us here on this Tuesday. So we welcome him in. We'd love for you to join in as well here in the second hour of the show, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and that number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Ferg with us here on this Tuesday. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on lately and what you got coming up with The Observer.
Yeah, so in addition to the podcast that we had to re-record that came out today, Dan and I talked in that one about the house settlement, and had some other fun conversations. We had a top four from our listener, where it was the top four players we could think of where we called that they were going to be stars like early.
Oh, okay.
Like before they
that
got
you were
in.
Right.
Yeah, that yeah. We were right on. So those were some fun talks. I had a listener Dan today say that he called Jay Crawford before last year, which he just really liked him coming out of high school, which, man, heck of a pull there. And then today I started a
Bill, I gave you a shout out on that podcast because I remember you were super early on Nehemiah Pritchett. I remember like very early on in Nehemiah's career, you were like, this guy's got the stuff. South Alabama tough.
Yep. I like those guys.
Yeah,
Auburn's
Roger
really
McCreary, the ultimate example
quite a few
of that.
Guys
yeah,
from down there.
Today I started a 2-part series in the newsletter where I've seen a bunch of people do this, and I decided to do one for Auburn. 25 years now in this century, quarter century mark we've hit. It's an all quarter century team for Auburn football. Did offense today. Going to do defense tomorrow and wrap that up. It was a lot of fun breaking it down. Some positions were very easy. I was really surprised at how easy it was to pick offensive linemen, because you could pick five All-Americans just boop, 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 right there for your quarter century team. But
maybe part of that is there haven't been that many others.
But when you have five that have kind of really separated themselves from everyone else, I think there were a couple where I was like, maybe like you could have made a push for Greg Robinson on there. It was a fun exercise. Had some people push back on one of my picks, but that's fine. And then we'll do defense tomorrow. So it was a lot of fun just going back and kind of you know, kind of thinking that since
they didn't like the Joey Gatewood at quarterback.
Yeah, they were not happy. No, it was actually former former Auburn beat writer Andy Bitter, who covers Virginia Tech, was like, "Where's Chris Todd at?" Which I was like, "Yeah, there you go. This is some Chris Todd love." But it was really interesting to go back through it and like realize like it's only been 25 years. And 25 years is a decently long time, but you look at the sheer amount of talent Auburn's mm-hmm. had in those 25 years. It's crazy. It's a ton of All-Americans, a lot of multi-time All-SEC guys on both sides of the ball. It's a really, really fun team. And it's also fun just to imagine, you know, like tomorrow. I'll just go ahead and spoil a little bit of it. Like tomorrow, your two defensive tackles are Nick Fairley and Derrick Brown. Could you imagine those two guys playing next to each other?
That'd be nice.
With Quentin Groves and Antonio Coleman coming off the edges. I mean, gosh, they would just be the most terrifying defensive line ever. But you know, it's just it was a whole lot of fun doing that, and you know, good off season thing to do. Kind of go back and have some fun while. Very, very slow time for news right now for both football and basketball.
Right. If there's news at this time of year, it's usually not good.
It's usually not great. And, you know.
And if your team's still adding right now, it's probably not a great sign either. I mean, you've already got
they're needing to add.
Yeah.
And I mean, was telling people, like, also, like, yeah, we have season preview stuff, and like, but, like, we got to get that for the next 2 months, you know. And so this was fun to kind of take a look. Like, last week did a lot of schedule and roster analysis at the Observer. This week decided to have a little bit of fun, and then we'll have the mailbag out later this week. Dan and I'll have a podcast out on Friday as well.
We did a lot of that the last 2 years, where you're still in May and June talking about football players that either could
still
be
need to add this.
Yeah,
or,
I guess again not to go overboard because you have no idea how things are going to shake out this year. But one, if you're looking for something different about this season for Auburn football versus the last, like what's been different about this off season compared to the last two, is how settled so much of the roster has seemed. Like
I was going to say how it feels. I had a shorter version set. I mean, yeah. It just feels like the roster is set.
I mean, if you think about how long a lot of these, I mean, if I'd had a Bill Cameron depth chart from December or January, like
from the first week of spring practice,
it would look a lot like the depth chart right now. Yep. And I think you did not say that about the first 2 years of the Hugh Freeze regime as far as the amount of turnover from December 1st to June 1st.
Who all did Auburn didn't Auburn add both Keandre Lambert Smith and Dorian Mahusi after spring last year?
Yeah, Auburn both.
You know, your best receiver and one of your better performers on defense weren't even there for spring last year.
Keron Crawford also joined the team in the spring last year and played a lot. You know, in the fall. So I mean it's been more of a scramble. Or it was more of a scramble the first couple of seasons, and it feels like it's been calm, you know. Hopefully to the benefit of the team in the fall, but it's been far less frantic as far as trying to assemble this roster than it was in Hugh Freeze's first 2 years, and I imagine that also allows him to focus more on high school recruiting, when you're not having to devote as many resources to going and finding veteran, filling veteran holes. I would think that allows you to devote more time to high school recruiting, which I feel like has gradually gotten better year after year under Freeze. And an exciting group of kids came and visited this month.
Yeah, and Auburn's gotten a couple of commitments: one for this upcoming year, another one for 2027. And they expect quite a few more before too long. Ferg, I like the thought of pegging guys early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's always fun.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead. I mean, let's talk about the guys that are coming in as newcomers this year. The one thing that's a little different is we've had a chance to see a lot of them.
Yeah.
In spring.
Almost
so I mean, we've got a little better advantage than we would have, you know, back in the old days when they were just now coming in for the summer.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one that stood out. I mean, there's probably a couple, but the ones that stood out to me the most during spring ball were the young DBs, and just trying to figure out like how that all is going to fit because you know obviously you look at the corners like Blake Woodby and Donovan Starr, you know the fact that Auburn had several corners, older corners, leave after spring ball, I think was a sign that you know those guys were making real push. And it's not like I deserve a pat on the back if these guys end up being good. But I really like Newboy Fagans a lot, and I really like Eric Winters as well. Like those are two guys that are just having watched those guys play up close in high school multiple times. It's just like I really, really enjoy the way they play. And spring ball, they look like they belonged.
Yeah, I mean, those are guys. It's been quite a while since Auburn brought in a couple of very highly touted safeties, and then as soon as you saw them out there, with the college roster, it's like, oh, these guys are going to play. They're going to play soon.
I think the last combo of safeties where I remember being like, okay, these guys look legit right off the bat. I didn't watch these guys in high school, so you know I wasn't as kind of clued into it. But I just remember the Jamie and Sherwood Smoke Monday combo, and like it was just like, oh, these guys are physically ready to do it at this level. We will see about getting you know the seasoning and the reps and all that to play defense, but like you know they just look like they belong out there right off the bat. So you know those young DBs. I mean, I feel like at corner and at safety, we're going to be talking about several of those guys this year as guys who could make a move and provide. What, you know, last year Auburn had Jake Crawford and Caleb Harris really step up and play these important, huge roles for Auburn. I don't know if they necessarily are going to have to be starters, but guys who can be in the rotation and the two deep at both of those spots, I think that freshman group is a lot of fun to watch, especially those two safeties. Just – you know, Auburn signed the best safety class in the country, and you know it's an area where they can make some immediate impact.
I think the whole secondary. You're right. You mentioned Woodby and Starr. I mean, that is a really really good looking.
And, I mean, the fact that Blake Woodby was like the third corner at times in spring ball, I think said a lot about where. And I also think again, when you see guys like J.C. Hart and Tyler Scott and like good players and like guys with good potential, if they just look and say, hey, you know, they're going on and moving on elsewhere, I think part of it or a big part of it was I think they saw these young guys coming in and that playing time was going to be even tougher to get.
And there's no telling how much playing time any of the young guys get this year because it does feel like Auburn has solid veteran options almost everywhere in the secondary.
Not really safety.
I think in the secondary, I think you can play guys a little bit more. Try to keep guys fresh.
Well, I would still put Harrison Smith at the.
You
need more than two. What I'm saying is, but you've got like you've got starters, but the next
at least with corner, you have those group of five transfers that you like. Mm-hmm. But
I think the next wave up almost anywhere could include a true freshman. Like I think the next like both backup safeties could conceivably be could conceivably be true freshmen.
Yeah.
And the next guy up at outside corner could very well be a Starr or a Fagans or.
Not Fagans.
No, a Starr, I guess, would be. Would be out there. Fagans could be what, either safety or inside corner?
I think he could play. So I watched him play outside corner at times at Thompson. Yeah.
And then there were
some times where they were just like when Thompson played a really good wide receiver, they just stuck him on him on the outside and said, "All right, you got it."
And with Champ, it's like I think that there's a lot of optimism that you're going to have Champ at 100% close to this, start of the season.
Those nickel and dime spots could be heavily affected by those freshmen just because you don't know how all those are going to check out.
What's your sense of is it Pleasant? Is that the
Rayshon Pleasant?
Rayshon Pleasant is the Tulane.
I like him. I want to do a little bit more digging on him in the near future, like I did with Caleb Wheatland. That'll probably be something I do maybe in the next week or two. His numbers were really good. He was the number two corner on a Tulane team that was a top
really,
20
really good
pass defense. He was also one of the best kick returners in the country this past season. I think that's one that. Kind of floating a little bit in under the radar is that kick return potential because you look at Auburn's kick returners this upcoming season, you have options, you have plenty of options, but you didn't really see a guy where you feel like, okay, that dude's going to be it no matter what. Punt return, you could see like Malcolm Simmons or, make that the kind of move. Eric Singleton makes a lot of sense there as well. But like kick return, it's like, okay, who is it going to be? You have a lot of really good straight line speed guys. Well, here's a dude in Pleasant that was really good at that, and even on top of that, you know, had a very long pick six last season. Just a guy who's got a ton of speed to burn.
And I wonder if Alston and Cobb, because of their increased role at running back, might not be.
I don't think Damari Alston's even remotely near kickoff return.
Right. Capability. So
Cobb maybe. I like Cobb.
Yeah.
I
mean, I guess he's good at that. Yeah. I mean, but I think like in the past, Auburn has looked at running backs in Jarquez was back there for a long time and.
But Cobb's I think when you look at it with Jarquez, is just his breakaway speed was so good that like the potential was there, and he was also a guy who just loved being on special teams. So
covering. I mean, he wanted to be on every coverage team.
Yeah, it's rare.
I still would probably guess like first kickoff of the season, Simmons. Would be my.
I'm telling you that they bring in Pleasant and he's ready to. I mean, he has proven. Yes, he has proven
100-yard punt and kick returns.
Yeah, I mean, no, but
well, interception return.
Really intriguing. You know what? And John Sumrall has gotten excellent corner play, like you know, from the Kentucky days. It feels like with different personnel, he's had guys who played well. The Troy teams had good corners, and the Tulane teams have had excellent corner play to get someone who produced on one of his defenses.
He graded out really, really well this past season in Tulane. Like his game a lot.
There was somebody else that got mentioned for punt returns with Simmons as
Singleton.
It was Singleton.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
That was. So
Singleton and Simmons are the fun slash terrifying one still is Perry Thompson.
Yeah.
And they throw him back out there. And it's like you feel good about the hands for sure. But I mean, you watch that dude play in high school and you know, you got some flashes of it last season with some big plays that he had, but like he's a big old dude that can move. Mm-hmm. And Singleton was really good at that in high school, and
he was the most explosive guy that I have seen the first time we saw him in practice he is special.
Yeah, I mean, that acceleration is different for him. I mean, it just is, and I think that he makes, and he's got the agility to go with it as well. His change of direction is really, really good. You know, which made him a really good slot receiver, which I think could help him be a really good partner. But I like Malcolm Simmons. I'm one of those guys, especially with Singleton coming in, and you would expect Singleton to play a pretty big role and maybe a similar role to what we've seen from Simmons at wide receiver. I feel like any way that you can find a way to get the ball in Malcolm Simmons' hands, the better. And, you know, kick return, punt return, those are two easy ways just to give him the opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I feel like that the feeling going into the fall is, man, really excited, feel like the defense is really solid. If the offense, you know, makes the progression,
they got talent.
That they should, this team. But, I mean, it's funny. I still feel like we're going to see a lot more new faces on defense this year than I don't know. On offense,
linebacker.
You're going to see the receivers. But, I mean, I think it at all three levels, defensive line, linebacker, and in the secondary, you're going to see – some newcomers and maybe more. Not even maybe. I think you'll see more freshmen that play on defense than you do on offense this year.
Yeah, because you don't really see it at quarterback or running back or wide receiver or tight end or offensive line immediately. I mean, it could happen. I mean, those guys could. One or two of those could emerge. Usually, someone does. But you're not banking on any of those guys on offense. You definitely
Sam Turner may be the freshman who could work into the rotation.
My thing with Sam Turner is and also we've seen guys have those flashes and those big plays, and it's like, and then you get to the season and it's like, okay, they're still freshmen. They still need some time. And it could be. Who knows? If he keeps making catches like he did in spring ball, he'll be on the field for sure. But, yeah, there's a lot of competition, especially when you're looking at the outside. You know you're going to play Coleman out there. You could play Singleton out there, some Horatio Fields, like you know, Perry Thompson. Like there's going to be a lot of those guys.
Yep. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive on ESPN 106.7.
Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We were talking a little Auburn football as the basically for Auburn, the sports competitive seasons are about done. Track and field is headed out for the national championships.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
Men
are ranked sixth. I think the women are in the top 30. Well,
not to steal a thunder from a potential podcast episode we were going to be doing, we may wait to do this after track season ends. But
is this a what's in the box?
No, but I kind of wanted to like just kind of go through all of Auburn sports and just kind of like look at just kind of a state of the program. And obviously we know more about football and basketball than these others, but, you know, I think track and field, I mean, you know, it's not a championship yet. Although they did win one.
National runners-up last year.
And they did win a championship.
And they're sixth. They ranked sixth going in. Yeah.
But, I mean, the hire of Leroy Burrell is looking like a huge one. And look, when you go get a track coach from Houston – right. You feel like it's going to work out, but he is really. I mean, it has been a tremendous success right now because, you know, Auburn track has had its high points and it's had its glory days. But like you're seeing, when you see as many young athletes on the men's and the women's side for Auburn competing and winning like they are right now, it is just a really really bright future to get to a point where You know, it might be tough to catch like an Arkansas. You know, you might not ever be in Oregon, but you could be a place where elite track and field athletes want to come here and perform. Because, I mean, look, I think you're in the SEC. We talked about it with the House settlement. Auburn's going to go all in with revenue sharing and all that, and adding scholarships. I mean, what sport can you look at Auburn and say as an SEC program? Oh, you know. You don't need to you won't ever be that good in this sport. There's not a single sport.
Yeah, especially
you can't win. Yeah, you can't win in X.
There's no chance. Yeah.
I don't think there's a single sport. And I think that's true for a lot of SEC schools.
Should be.
It should be. But I think Auburn also has the unique spot where some non-revenue sports where other schools have not been great at, Auburn can at least point to a point in their program's history where we said, well, they can do that. I think of, again, you know, this is a bigger one, but like I think of women's basketball, and I think, you know, at one point, you know, this program was one of the very best in the country.
Absolutely was.
You have the capability to get back there. You have the resources. You got to have the right coach and the right talent. You got to build it together. But yeah, like for a while, we could have said men's basketball at Auburn, and look where you are now with that. So yeah, I think any sport, I mean, you can go all the
men's basketball probably. Before Bruce Pearl was the sport which you would say they had
where Auburn was consistently
the longest shot of being
the only other one I can think of. The only other one I can think of, and this one's also made some strides recently. I know last season didn't go as hot for him, but I think they'll be back. Is volleyball? That is a sport where Auburn has had like almost zero history whatsoever, and they've made strides in that because. Again, if you're at Auburn and you're in the SEC, you've got the money, you've got the resources, you've got the access to talent where it's just like, come on. And you can go pull, like I think when we were talking about with Burrell, you can go pull an established coach and an established program. Yeah. You did that in volleyball as well. You did that way back when in softball. And you did it again in softball, even though it was kind of interconference. But
you're seeing several – I mean, men's basketball, like let's focus there. Like you're seeing several men's basketball programs in the SEC that are on probably their best run in program history or, you know, one of the better extended runs in program history. You think about what Nate Oates has accomplished. You think about the last – I mean, Rick Barnes is in the mix.
I think it's definitely Tennessee's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the mix.
Definitely Auburn. I think it's Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alabama. I mean, there's
to be sustained. Yeah.
I mean, it would be the best run you know, what Florida's doing would be the best run for a lot of, you know, a lot of coaches and a lot
Billy
of places.
If Billy Donovan didn't exist.
If Billy Donovan hadn't won two championships.
If he wins another one this year,
then they could go into the years.
I tell you, if Florida wins a national championship again in basketball within the next few years, it is the best run they've been on, because the SEC right now is not what the SEC. When Billy Donovan was winning the SEC, it was like, all right, beat Kentucky.
They played, I checked on it, and there was, I think the first year Florida won it all, they played 18 conference games and the opponent was ranked twice in the top 25. It was a different league.
And
it's like, meanwhile, you think about like Auburn.
Now,
I could be wrong, but
you could play ranked opponents twice in a week.
And often you did in the SEC this year. Like
I could be wrong, but I think this might be Mississippi State's best run.
It may be.
And it's approaching, if they ever do anything, Ole Miss. Because Ole Miss doesn't really have much basketball.
Stansberry won a title, didn't he? Maybe just a conference title, but I could have sworn Rick Stansberry maybe won a title.
I'm gonna look that up.
I don't know about
maybe
yeah, but
right.
I don't know if they did much back to back.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I mean, how about this? Ole Miss. It's one of the better.
It is. I mean, you go into the pavilion, and you look up at the banners in the pavilion, and a lot of it says NIT on it. Not like NIT champion, like we made the NIT.
Right.
All right, I'm looking at Mississippi State right now. NCAA tournaments. Oh, they changed this. Okay, how about this? Mississippi State has made the NCAA tournament for three straight years. One more ties a program record. They've only ever been to the SEC, the NCAA tournament 4 years in a row once. That stretch, Dan, they did win a tournament title and a regular season title, 02 and 04. I believe that would have been Stansberry. So yeah, maybe.
But it's close.
It's close. And again,
better league than it was.
A whole lot better league than it was, you know, back then.
I always liked Rick Stansberry. Seemed like he was trying to fight with. I mean, again, it's not the easiest place to win in practically anything.
And no shade to Starkville, Mississippi. I feel like Starkville is perfectly fine. It's not the most exciting place in the world. There's some great restaurants there, and I enjoy my time going there.
It's become a real Starkville and Oxford both, right, have really exploded as
I think Oxford's always
more
been
Oxford than yeah.
Yeah, Starkville's getting up there with that. Yeah, but every time I go to Starkville, Mississippi, I look around and it's like, man, you got to do some convincing to get people to come to school here. You don't have to do it as much to get people to come to Auburn. And I think that's one of their big weapons. You know, Andy was talking earlier about Ike Irish and you kind of his path here. Our podcast last week with Adam Cole, when we were previewing the Super Regional, he was telling the story about the feature he did on Ike Irish. And he was like, I mean, Ike Irish is from Michigan.
Yep.
And here's a kid who, I mean, couldn't have grown up any further from the SEC and Auburn and what all that means. Didn't like dream of playing in the SEC or anything. He makes one campus visit here. He's like, "Yep, this is it. So this is where I'm gonna be." To the point where he stayed loyal through. I mean, he could have easily jumped in the portal.
He was approached. He had opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
To leave and get a whole lot more money.
And again, it's the power of Auburn. I don't want to get cheesy and I don't want to get hokey, but pretty much everybody who's listening to this right now has some sort of connection to Auburn, and you know it's got that kind of – Auburn has a little different feel than a lot of other places, and they use that really well in recruiting. And I think the successful programs can sit here and say, yeah, you could go win at a lot of places. I think men's basketball is a great example of this, where you come in and say, yeah, you can do a lot of winning. We're doing a lot of winning here, and if you come here, this is a pretty cool place to live, and it's a pretty cool place to go to school. That's different than saying, like, I don't know, I would say it's different than, like, in basketball, I would say it's very different than, like, a Kentucky. I would say it's different in a way from, like, a Duke or North Carolina, just because of the way those cities are set up. It's different from a Knoxville. So it vibes well with some of these guys.
It's funny, it's not for some, though.
It's not for some, but it's for more than you might imagine. I think of Derek Hall, who could have played anywhere in the SEC, and Derek Hall just liked the fact that like Auburn was this like kind of laid back place, and it clicked with him and vibed with him.
How about Ike? I mean, Ike seems Ike's a pretty solid example, right? I mean,
yeah, I just said that.
I mean, oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's, I mean, because we've talked about how this is a guy, and I guess, and I mean, the Jahni Broome would be a pretty good example too, although his teams, although his teams were winning, so it's a little bit different than Derek or Ike, because I think they had Jarquez would be a better example, I think, than, you know, of recent guys where it's like they had the individual.
I keep going back to like how much Jarquez could have gotten in the portal.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll say the same thing about Cam Coleman this year, but
and the fact that and I guess the fact that Tejada didn't go into the portal while experimenting with the NBA draft.
Tejada's a great example of this, because this kid is from Jersey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he could have played. I mean, I know UConn really wanted him, and he could have played it. Imagine him at St. John's, you know, would have made a ton of sense. And for some reason, it just clicks with certain guys.
Yep.
And like with the case of Ike Irish, like in the case of Tejada Pettiford, it could be dudes who have never even thought about playing here. Right. Just SEC basketball. Tejada Pettiford told me he didn't really watch college basketball growing up. He just liked playing the game. And so it's like, I don't know. Auburn's got something different about it. And I think to bring it back to the beginning, when you get the right coaches in place who know how to tap into that, anything can be good in this place.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. We've got about 20 minutes to go here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Drew at the controls.
Justin Ferguson, we haven't talked about it too much, but a Braves season ticket holder.
Yeah, I thought we'd get into Major League Baseball here.
Do a quick segment talking a little bit about the about your thoughts on.
Hey, they're back to within. They're only single digits under 500 now. Right?
Yeah.
Got
the Rockies this weekend. If they can win the series with the Brewers, you might be able to get a little momentum going.
Yeah.
What's your sense on Strider?
I don't know. It's over. He will not be the pitcher that he once was.
Ever?
If he doesn't get that velo back up to the high 90s, it's over in terms of being what he was. Because Spencer Strider, God bless him, is a two-pitch pitcher. And it's like that slider really only works if it's coming off a high velocity. It's like Chris Sale. It's like it only really works if it's coming off super high velocity. And if you're throwing 93 and 94 – and then you're backing it up with that slider. It's just his command's not been great.
He's at home against the Rockies this week. And in general, if you can't make it work then, it's big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
So and that doesn't just go for Strider. I'd say in general, if you can't make it work, if you're on a cold stretch and the Rockies come to town and you can't turn it around there,
I mean,
it's going to be a long season.
The Braves have an above. The Braves are 9 games below 500, but they have a positive run differential.
Curious to see what the representation.
They lost 5 straight games by 1 run. They've lost 9 straight 1 run games, I believe, but they lost 5 straight by 1. And it's like, you know, it's the little things, and this team does not do a very good job of the little things. I think management does a terrible job of the little things, and you have not been able to keep your hitting and your pitching in sync. This season, it feels like you're going to get one without it. Now, last night, you got both. But it was very helpful that you got both because you had your best pitcher on the hill. And your offense really started to come alive against a Brewers team where their pitching staff is just like, can anybody stay healthy? They're just throwing dudes out there.
What's crazy, though, is they're second in the league in ERA.
Yeah.
They throw somebody out there, and they seem to do pretty well. It's funny. Now, I was reading, and I don't remember – who it was, as all the baseball stuff that I look at. but one of the writers that I was reading, I know what it was. It was a Q&A. Mm-hmm. It was a Q&A with a national writer just on, you know, what can the Braves do and things like that and what can Alex do.
Fire Brian
Snicker. Comment, the return was, well, everybody thought he was a genius because he just threw some stuff against the wall a couple of years ago and it worked. Mm-hmm. But you look at a lot of the other moves, and they don't really make as much sense. Mm-hmm. And the moves when they got Soler and brought what's his name back?
Scott Peterson.
They got Peterson.
Adam Duvall. Yeah.
Those weren't the kinds of moves that normally really work big, but they did for the Braves. And it said, this writer apparently isn't the biggest Alex Anthopoulos fan.
I'm not crazy about what's going on with him. I feel like when you look at the Braves, like they needed to address their bullpen, especially with A.J. Minter walking to the Mets, and you didn't really do anything. And Joe Jimenez is hurt, and then
– And Rizal is Rizal's, 35 now.
Yeah, Rizal's fallen off, and when closers lose it, they lose it. But you know, you've got a spot here where you had to kind of upgrade, and you felt like coming into the year, like, okay, you felt like going the off season, like you needed to address your left field, you needed to address short. Well, they only addressed one of them, mm-hmm. and the guy they addressed it with was, in hindsight, clearly juicing. Because he had the year of his career, and then you paid him. And they didn't overspend. I'm not sitting here thinking it's like a Dansby Swanson situation where it's just like, okay, well, you overpaid for that guy coming off contract year. But apparently he's supposed to be – Profar is supposed to begin a rehab assignment next week. I think he's eligible to get a little bit going. So yeah, that'll help. It's tough, though, when you have a team that – has not managed their bullpen correctly, and like it feels like every time they got runners in scoring position, it's just not going to work.
Do you think they buy at the deadline,
or it depends on where they are?
10 games under 500.
No, I don't think so either.
It depends on where they are. If we get to the All-Star break and towards the deadline, and they're around 500, they're going to be a team that can say, okay, we have good enough players that we can make a run at that final wild card spot. And I think they could. I really think they could.
And maybe even add at that point. They might think like, okay, if there's a
that's what I'm saying.
If there's a spot that makes sense in the bullpen or in the outfield.
They need a shortstop badly.
Shortstop.
It pained me to see how many people who were excited that Nacho Alvarez is starting a rehab assignment soon in the complex league. And it's just like,
would the Rockies deal Tovar?
God, he's really bad. I hope not. He's got like 8 years of club.
I know.
They won't look. They wouldn't deal Brendan Rodgers.
I know.
Why would they deal Ezekiel Tovar?
I know. I don't. I mean, just
the guy they need to move 100%. The guy they need to move is Brendan Doyle. His stock will never be higher.
Sure.
Well, his stock is right now pretty dang low. Yeah. He's a gold glove
outfielder.
Gold Glover, who was a 2020 guy last year.
Yeah. And I mean Tovar. No, I mean. You know, I wanted the Braves, like, the Profar deal out of free agency. There wasn't a good shortstop in free agency except for Willy Adames, and wow, you dodged that bullet. My fantasy team did as well. Saw the other day, he has the fourth worst OPS of qualified hitters right now. Yeah. They paid him, I believe it was like a seven-year deal. It's like a seven-year, 140.
You know, he really took to hitting, second time in the show, I'm talking about the Brewers ballpark. He really took to hitting in Milwaukee. Like, his home numbers were crazy last year as a Brewer.
Oh, yeah.
And I wondered if the best thing for him was maybe they'll play Ortiz and Durbin instead in the infield.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
Yeah, I think with Atlanta, though, like, I wanted them to kind of roll the dice on somebody and see. You know, that's what they did with Orlando Arcia a few years ago. That's obviously what they did with Chris Sale. The one I really liked eyeballing, man, he has torn it up to start so far this season. I was like buy the dip on Bo Bichette coming into a contract year, and he is. I mean, last time I checked, he was hitting the ball really, really well for the Blue Jays right now.
There's talk of the Rockies maybe dealing McMahon and who's the reliever that folks think Bard. Is it Bird? Yeah, Daniel Bard's out of baseball.
I think Daniel Bard.
No, it's Bird. Bird and
Even
Bird.
It's funny. He's not their closer, but he is their best reliever.
Bird and McMahon are the folks that people talk about the most, and maybe the Yankees going after both of them is there some buzz? I'll tell you what, the Pirates could package a reliever and an infielder because I think IKF could be.
Oh, I do too.
On the move,
Yankees could very much be in on
again.
And we were just talking. I mean, the Braves could be looking in the bullpen and at shortstop, and I of the teams in the NL who could be offering players. I think that would be
the Pirates will not be asking for nothing back. Pirates would be looking for something for those two guys.
I will welcome O'Neill Cruz back to shortstop. I'll make that move.
Yeah, I don't.
The center field thing's dumb. Like,
well, that's
what he's
that's,
one of yeah. the worst
well, that's
defensive.
What the Marlins tried with Jazz.
I know. It's,
remember,
yeah. I mean, but he's like one of the worst defensive outfielders in baseball.
And so what's Chisholm? It's like,
and it's like,
get
well,
him
he's
back
fast.
In the infield. At least you well, know, it's fast, not shortstop. Like, play him at third.
Can he play first? I know the athleticism is the sort of the thinking behind putting him in an outfield spot. Yeah. But like,
you put him at first, and you kind of like. Try to make him like Matt Olson, just like a really good, like agile big
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think you'd look at third if you didn't look at
sure.
I mean, keep Brian Hayes.
How about,
when is he ever going to do?
Yeah.
That?
How about Encarnacion Strand getting some run at third? I didn't think they would. You know, I don't think the Reds would push that button. But I guess they're checking to see what.
But they're
like,
trying to get his. It's a huge, get some bats.
It's a huge bat if you can
by
play.
By the way,
him
did
third.
You see the Red Sox
brought up Anthony
Roman Anthony? Did you see his? Did you see his grand slam the other night? In AAA?
No.
495.
Wow.
He hit a grand slam 495. They ran his, and it's AAA, but they ran his numbers. His average exit velocity in AAA would have only been behind three major leaguers, and it's Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, and O'Neill Cruz. Like, dude hits the snot out of the ball. And that'll be fun to see because the Red Sox are once again having that year where it's like, you're supposed to be a lot better than this.
Fun baseball segment. We forgot to mention we're Jake on Friday. We usually have Jake in the 5 o'clock hour, so we will have Jake on Friday in the 5 o'clock hour, and with the All-Star game in Atlanta next month. So on ESPN.com, projection of the roster that had Chris Sale as the lone Brave making the All-Star game.
There will be more.
I wonder how many more there could be. I think Austin Riley's putting together a case.
Ronnie's gonna get into replacement player territory.
Ronnie, and
100%.
I mean, have we gotten a fan vote update? Is Ronnie in the? I mean,
no,
I
no,
wouldn't be all that shocked if Ronnie was one of the top three for the.
He always does well on
for the fan vote as well.
But I'm just thinking, like, you know, if he doesn't make a starter spot, but like, you know, a replacement player, it's gonna be easy. Whoever's figuring that out just can look and say, oh, we'll put Ronald Acuna in. Like MLB will be like, yeah, have Ronald Acuna out there in Atlanta.
I mean, I think, Alonso Marte, Lindor, and Machado would probably be like by the merits, those four guys like should be the infield. But I wonder if a fan vote could upset.
What was the outfield pick?
ESPN had Wood. They had
Corbin Carroll,
and they had Pete Crow Armstrong.
Yeah. Tough to say no to any of those guys, but they probably won't be your top three.
Kyle Tucker.
I know Kyle Tucker was on fire
at one point.
Yes, but I mean PCA is just phenomenal.
Tatis would also be in the running for one of those spots potentially. I think, and speaking of James Wood, who we don't talk about all that often before we take a break, but
talk about the Nats that much.
The stat I saw about James Wood that like someone compared what he's doing right now to what Aaron Judge was up to at James Wood's age. By the way, not James Woods from Hercules and Casino, but James Wood. He is apparently when Aaron Judge was age 22 season. I think it's like he was in.
Okay, there's a caveat to this that I don't know. I think we're not considering, but go ahead.
Single A, and James Wood has a higher slugging percentage in the majors right now than Judge did at Single A at that point.
To be fair, Aaron Judge played college baseball.
Aaron Judge came from college, but still, I mean, the thought that Wood's doing this at this age, like take the Judge part of it out of it,
yeah,
like no, this
yeah.
guy's.
Oh, he's terrified, man.
Yeah, I mean,
I've watched the Braves play the Nats. I watched them play in person a few times this season, and I'm just like, every time he steps to the plate, I get scared.
This is the third time.
CJ Abrams can put it together.
They have some young. They have some.
They're talking about bringing Brady House up soon.
How many times?
Hey, they made a move today.
They got?
Did you see what the Nats did? They brought up Bruce the Bat Dog.
Yeah,
from AAA.
There you go.
I mean, they
anything
even,
works.
They sent out a release on this.
Bruce, is that like
21-month-old golden retriever who is batting 1,000 as far as retrieving bats?
Attaboy.
They sent down Josh Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
to make room on the 40-man roster, they had designated Josh Bell for assignment. Is that like the penguin throwing out the first pitch at the White Sox game the other day? Which I saw.
Didn't see that. No, I didn't see
it. It was like World Oceans Day or something, and they got a penguin from the zoo, and nice. He like walked him
match
out
the,
to
match
walked
the
him
colors.
Out to, yeah, yeah, no, yeah, it looked cool. Color, it looked
wore,
really cool.
Wore the uniform, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
I'm sure I've seen worse, you know, and that, ceremonial first pitches.
And also, like, that White's like the Penguins now the fourth best prospect in the White Sox organization, I think. Especially on the mound.
Yeah, the way things are going for them.
We gotta take a break.
Yeah, we are way behind. Gotta get to our final break here on the Tuesday Drive. Experience and